check.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. Of course, we're netcasting all around the country, all around the world, and we're happy to have each and every one of you with us today, be ye here in Florida, be ye around the country, or any place around the globe. Welcome to the Guy James Show today, and we also invite you to participate in the program by giving us a call at 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. A lot of news today. We'll cover everything that we can. We've got a great interview coming up at the bottom of this hour. Don't know what to expect. A gentleman by the name of Victor Gold, who served as Deputy Press Secretary to Barry Goldwater in the 64 presidential campaign. He was Press Secretary to Spiro Agnew from 70 to 73. And get this, speechwriter and senior advisor to George H.W. Bush in the 80s. And he's a personal friend of the Bush family and many other prominent politicians. And he's written a book. And I must tell you that I have read the book. And I'm going to give away a copy of it today. It's called Invasion of the Party Snatchers, How the Holy Rollers and the Neocons Destroyed the GOP. Here's a man that's a devout Republican. Is aghast at what's going on in the Republican Party today. So it should be a... extremely interesting interview coming up with Victor Gold at the bottom of this hour. Got the old stuffy nose today and all that. Don't know if these old springtime allergy things will ever go away. It seems like they won't. Anyway, a lot to talk about today, and we do hope you'll join us. Of course, the Virginia Tech story is still at the forefront of the news and probably will remain so for quite a long time. I heard Tucker Carlson say, yes, I watched Tucker Carlson. I heard Tucker Carlson say that he'd never seen more satellite trucks and press members at any event that he's ever been to than was at Virginia Tech yesterday. So it really is gathering the news in a big, big way in that most unfortunate incident. A few things dribbling out here and there about the mindset of this guy that did this. I don't think any of it is surprising to anybody. He was obviously off his rocker, had been planning this, had a great deal of hatred and frustration, whatever, built up in his warped mind. And you would have to be warped to do something like that, so we're not disparaging anybody. That's just how it is. There's no rhyme or reason to it. There's no reason to go looking for some deep-seated reasoning for his thinking, because there probably isn't any. Like I mentioned yesterday, I think we'll have to accept the fact that it's a tragedy of major proportions. It's another day in our history that we'll never forget, but it's one more human event that we'll never understand either. We'll just have to chalk it off to a demented young mind that went wrong someplace. There were indications that this young man did have some sort of psychological problems. I'm sure you've all seen the interview with one of his instructors that said she was worried that he may have tendencies like this. But so be it. It happened, and there's not a lot we can do about it now. I don't think there's a thing we can do to prevent any sort of thing like this from happening in the future. All the security in the world, all the gun control in the world, nothing. Nothing is going to prevent a human mind from snapping and going out and killing a bunch of people if that's what they're hell-bent upon doing, and evidently he was. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today is the right wing, and they're just going off the deep end right now. And I talked to you about hatred coming from them, and they are the true conscience of the right wing, these right wing talkers on the radio. You know, just let them keep talking. And we see their frustration over the state of the war and the state of the world, and we see it with Savage and Limbaugh and Hannity. There's a tremendous amount of frustration building up with them. And frustration really does my heart some good. But I want to play you a montage. I promised you last week that I would do this during this Don Imus thing, if you think Don Imus was an isolated incident, and I know none of you do. But there's some of you that are maybe not aware of the gravity of the situation with some of these other talkers. So I put together a little montage, and I floated it out on the internet, and I see it's all over the place now. This will take a few minutes, but it'll give you a good example of what I'm talking about right-wing radio hate and why Don Imus was not an isolated incident.
For instance, or for goodness sakes, jump in.
Neil Boortz.
I'm going to just start out with something controversial. I saw Cynthia McKinney's new hairdo. Have you seen it, Belinda?
No.
She looks like a ghetto slut.
I love talking to you about these Katrina refugees. I mean, so many of them have turned out to be complete bums. Just debris. Debris that Hurricane Katrina washed across the country. That describes Theon Johnson. Theron Johnson, New York City, Katrina deadbeat, like so many thousands more. I don't care whether you were born into the religion or you chose the religion. It is, at its core, a violent, violent religion. I could, you know, I know you disagree with me. That's fine. You can disagree all you want. And I also believe that this Muhammad guy is just a phony rag picker that created.
You have the right to believe whatever you like.
Well, thank you for that.
But it's just remarkable to continue to witness the actual racism that exists on the left. Using the term magic Negro to apply to you white people who are supporting Obama. Singing a song in my head here during the break. Barack the magic Negro. Uh-oh, Dawn's shaking her head on that. What are you saying? If I do that, I then will own the term. Because I will be taking it above and beyond how it's been used. Well, that's what we always do here. We do parodies and satires on the idiocy and the phoniness of the left. And for Barack Obama, he's a half minority. Hey, Barack Obama has picked up another endorsement. African-American actress Halle Berry. As a African-American, I'm honored to have Ms. Berry's support, as well as the support of other African-Americans. Obama, he didn't say it, but I mean, anyway, there are those greetings.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
Well,
what do you mean? He's very. He is. He's colorless. He is colorless. When
he
says. Yes.
History was made last Tuesday when Democrat Keith Ellison got elected to Congress representing the great state of Minnesota.
Well, not really unusual that Minnesota would elect a Democrat. What is noteworthy is that Keith is the first Muslim in history to be elected to the House of Representatives. He joins us now. Congratulations, sir.
How you doing, Glenn? Glad to be here.
Thank you. I will tell you, may we have 5 minutes here where we're just politically incorrect and I play the cards face up on the table?
Go there.
Okay. No offense, and I know Muslims. I like Muslims. I've been to mosques. I really don't believe that Islam is a religion of evil. I think it's being hijacked, quite frankly.
How many of you have regularly heard Glenn Beck would think that he knows Muslims and likes Muslim, that he respects them? How many of you would think that?
With that being said, you are a Democrat. You are saying, let's cut and run. And I have to tell you, I have been nervous about this interview with you because what I feel like saying is, sir, prove to me that you are not working with our enemies. And I know you're not. I'm not accusing you of being an enemy, but that's the way I feel. And I think a lot of Americans will feel that way.
Yeah, sure, Glenn. Lots of people would make a god-awful statement like that. Prove to me that you're not John Dillinger. Prove to me that you're not a Nazi. Prove to me that you're not... God, what a thing to say. And yet people follow these people, the legions of followers to guys like Glenn Beck, and there's more.
I can't take it that Rosie O'Donnell can be put on ABC television, mainstream.
I can't take it that you're on TV.
By the mainstream media. She can say whatever she wants to say. She can take the sides with, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, a guy who was the mastermind behind 9/11. She can make him into some sort of a martyr. Without anybody at ABC, NBC, CBS, mainstream media, they say nothing about that. Nothing. She goes off on her opinion every step of the way. But there's a conservative on the set who's shut down. You can't just say your opinion. What the hell is this show all about, you fat witch?
I don't want to sound like the old ball and chain guy, but Hillary Clinton cannot be elected president Because am I wrong in feeling, am I the only one in America that feels this way? That there's something about her vocal range. There's something about her voice that just drives me. It's not what she says, it's how she says it. She is like the stereotypical, excuse the expression, but this is the way to, she's a stereotypical bitch.
Oh, and I was going to have a few comments on the other Democratic presidential candidate, John Edwards, but it turns out that you have to go into rehab if you use the word faggot. So,
and I don't think there's anything offensive about any variation of faggy, faggotry, faggot, fag. It's a schoolyard taunt. It means wussy. It means, you know, Hillary giving a speech in a fake southern drawl. That's faggy. A trial lawyer who weeps before juries is faggy. Lifetime TV, faggy. Everyone understood I was not literally calling, for one thing, I wasn't calling John Edwards anything. That was the whole point. I couldn't talk about him, his life's work, his appeasement policies, his wimpiness on foreign policy, because that word is out of bounds. So in point of fact, I called John Edwards nothing. I said I couldn't even discuss him, because using any variation of that totally excellent word would send me into rehab.
Now, I don't like Bush's policies in most cases, but I would never call him those names. Notice what this double-talking slut just did, this mind slut, Barbara Walters.
I have to thank my incredible wife, Tammy, and our four children, Beckett and Bailey and Johnny Rosen Miller. And
I don't care.
Everyone I've ever
get her off my show. I don't care what her name is. I don't like a woman married to a woman. It makes me want to puke. How's that? I want to vomit when I hear it. I think it's child abuse. That's my opinion. One man's opinion. If it's illegal, tell me it's illegal to have an opinion in America. Maybe I can be excommunicated for having an opinion. I want to puke when I hear about a woman married to a woman raising children, because frankly, I think that it's child abuse to do that to children without their permission. What does a child know?
San Francisco police are seeking to determine whether the slaying of a transgender victim found naked near the Interstate 280 freeway is somehow linked to reports of a nude woman seen walking on the same freeway 2 hours later, authorities said. Lynch said it appeared the victim had been in the process of becoming a woman. Psychopath. Should have been in a back ward in a straitjacket for years, howling on major medication. Then they go into, she said, transgender victims of hate crime, extremely violent killing, are frequently left partially clothed or completely nude. It's making a statement and humiliating a victim. Blah, 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 blah. I am so beyond fed up with freaks. I live in Freak City. You know, I don't mind freaks. I used to go to Ringling Brothers when I was a little kid, and the freak show was my favorite part of the circus. I didn't go to the Mockum. I like to see the one-breasted man. I like to see the mustached woman. But when I wake up as an adult and I find out that they're actually all Democrats today, passing themselves off as normal, I'm sorry. Someone's got to say this is a freak show, time out. And what's this sympathy, constant sympathy, for sexually confused people? Why should we have constant sympathy for people who are freaks in every society? I didn't say hurt the freaks. I didn't say do anything to the freaks. But you're never going to make me respect the freak. I don't want to respect the freak. The freak ought to be glad that they're allowed to walk around without begging for something. You know, I'm sick and tired of the whole country begging, bending over backwards for the junkie, the freak, the pervert, the illegal immigrant. All of them are better than everybody else.
Mike Savage, talking about anybody different than him. Anybody different than his ideal of what is the perfect American, I guess, and along with Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. The unadulterated hatred of these people for anybody other than their ideal is amazing to me. It really is. You know, we talked yesterday at the opening of the show about how we're just a blip on the screen this planet is in all of creation, and how the humanity is, as we know it, just a small group of people. We're all just people. We're different colors. We have different ideas about things, but we're all the same. But these people don't recognize that. They never have. They never will. They're latent, well, really not latent. They're openly racist. You talk to a hardcore Republican, one of today's Republicans that backs George Bush. I will guarantee you that if you talk to one of today's George Bush Republicans, I'm not talking about a Goldwater Republican, anybody like that. I'm talking about a George Bush, honest-to-God, neocon Republican. Sooner or later in the conversation, you will find that person is absolutely, positively racist. You will find that in 99% of the cases. I guarantee you that sooner or later, the racism, the homophobism, it'll all leak out sooner or later when you talk to these people, the George Bush-style Republicans. These are the people that have hijacked the Republican Party. A shameful group. Oh, no, we're not racist, guy. We're not racist. How dare you say that about it? You know, I have one answer to that. And it always shuts them up, as it should. Stand outside the House of Representatives and stand outside the Senate chamber and count how many black faces walk in there that wear a Republican badge. How many? How many? 10? 5? 3? 1? Oh, none? None? One of two major political parties in the United States? One of two? And you're going to tell me you have the welfare of all people in mind? That you're going to govern all people? That you're of the people, by the people, and for the people, and your party is not represented in the United States Capitol building by even one person, one who has black skin? I don't know another way to say it other than today's George W. Bush, neocon, Dick Cheney Republicans are racist. It is a fact. You need no further proof than what I just said. You need no further proof at all. They hate the Spanish. They hate everybody that isn't white, Anglo-Saxon, whatever they are religiously. They hate them. It's so frustrating. And we're going to talk about our little friend Andy Coulter and the evangelicals, the crazies. I'm not speaking about all evangelicals now. Don't get excited. But their leadership. A friend of mine sent me an email today, and we've been talking about this evangelical problem and the Bibles in the school and all that, and said we as Democrats need to let people know that we're not a bunch of godless heathens and all that, and we need to back religion and let anybody choose and not, you know, no one specific one. And I wrote back, and he said, even the evangelicals. And I said, how do we say we support the evangelicals without throwing our lot in with their leaders, the Falwells, the Robertson, the Dobsons, the Richard Lands? How do we do that? How do we separate that out? Knowing that this is a group of Americans that have profound religious beliefs, and yet their leadership is a bunch of wacko nuts. I don't know. Let's try the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Kevin from Washington.
Hi, Kevin.
How you doing?
Good.
I'll do you one better. How about the series of disenfranchisement of the black vote they've been pulling for the past 6 years? Washington, D.C., Ohio, Florida, you know, the games that they play with our vote.
Absolutely.
Forget about Congress. You know, congressmen or anybody who, you know, has its own elite kind of thing. But the basic thing, the voice of the people, their constant refusal of trying to, you know, I guess strangle the black vote by any means necessary. And for those few black Republicans out there, and this is something I would say as a warning for all black people, it's a con, it's a hustle. Just like they used to say during slavery, they would treat certain groups of blacks better than others to say, well, slavery was a humane thing. That's what the Republican Party is doing. Especially, you know, like that guy who ran for senator in Maryland. It's a hustle. It's a con. Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Oh, yeah. Well, the difference being, when they disenfranchise the black voters, it's not because they're afraid of the black vote. It's the fact that they want to keep any particular house or seat they have in Congress or the presidency and all that. That's what they're fighting. That's not, to me, that's not overt racism. It is, but they're not. The intent of it is not to deny the blacks a seat in Congress or anything. The intent is just to get another white Republican guy in there.
But I think what they did here in Washington was blatantly racist. Where just when they were about to put on the table, they just slipped in a bill saying, "Well, we have to relax the gun control laws," knowing that, you know, certain parts of D.C. does have a serious drug and gun crime problem. And they said, and you know what, if I was a Democrat, I would have called their bluff and said, you know what, sure, relax the gun control laws. And when they start having drive-bys on Capitol Hill, you know, guess who will be running for cover?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. You make a good point. Hey, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Okay. Bye.
I don't know how in the world the Republican Party would ever get through to the black community. I don't know what they could say to sway the vote of the average Afro-American community. How would you do that? What would you tell them? Hey, we've been working for you. Yeah, we've been working for them, all right. They don't work for any minorities. Not now, not ever. Never do they work for any minorities. That's just the way it is. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in a minute, and hopefully we'll have our guest on at the time.
Of all the things to focus on, what is it about Bring 'Em On that so rouses them? What is it that so offends them? What is it that so irritates them? Oh, so you little hangers-on in Iraq, so you're going to threaten our guys? Well, come on. Bring 'Em On. We'll do. This intimidates the Democrats. What is the big deal?
Yes, Mary.
I have a son in Iraq, and I just wanted to tell y'all, my child has a family that loves him, too.
Yes.
His little girl was just born in February. When he get back here, he'll be on your own. And I'm trying to tell y'all, listen to me, please. You don't understand. We got a child there. I raised my child to be a good person. This is too much for them to die alone. In some lands that they don't know about, every day I get scared. I just wanted to tell y'all that.
What is the big deal?
But I'd like to get to know you.
Yes, I would.
But I'd like to get to know you.
If I could.
But I'd like to get to know
you. Finally I found, searching all around, just was not the answer. What I thought was true looked a bit like you. I figured I might chance her.
But I'd like to get to know you.
Yes, I would.
But I'd like to get to know you.
If I could.
Yes, I'd like to get to know you.
If I could.
Well, I can't promise that I'll spend a day with you. I can't promise that I'll find a way with you. I can't promise. No, I can't promise that I'll love you. I'd like to get to know you.
Yes, I would.
Yes, I'd like to get to know you.
If I could.
I'd like to get to know you.
Oh, yeah. Those Republicans, those modern-day neocon Republicans, they'd like to get to know everybody all right, except for the ones they don't want anything to do with, which is a whole hell of a lot of the people anyway. Right now, as promised, I promised you a great guest today, and I have on the line with us right now a gentleman by the name of Victor Gold. Victor, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on.
What a book. And for our listeners' sake, once again, I'll let them know it's called Invasion of the Party Snatchers, How the Holy Rollers and the Neocons Destroyed the GOP. It's a great read. I highly recommend this. And by the way, we're, for our listening audience, we're going to give away a copy here in a while, a little later on in the program. So be tuned in for that. But you, Victor, are... the personification of the guy I'm usually talking about when I talk about the real Republicans. And I understand you have always been a Republican, and you still are a real Republican, right?
Well, let me say this. I go back half a century. Almost a half a century. I joined Barry Goldwater's campaign in 64, but I'm from New Orleans and grew up a Democrat. So I moved over to the conservative Republican, to the Barry Goldwater cause, actually, in the mid-60s, when, like Ronald Reagan, I felt the Democratic Party had left me, which is pretty much the same feeling I'm getting right now about the Republican Party as it exists today. It's no longer the party I knew or those of us knew who were with Senator Goldwater.
Well, those are the Republicans I usually talk about when I talk about what I consider the good old days when we'd sit down with our neighbors and they were Republicans and we as Democrats would sit down and have a healthy conversation and shake hands and walk away and, you know, have some honest differences, but by and large know that both parties were looking out for the people and had the best interest in mind. And nowadays it's something different, I think.
Well, one of the things that I say in the book that Senator Goldwater brought to his politics was something that's sadly missing from the politics that we see today from members of what calls itself the Republican Party, and that is civility. Senator Goldwater was a fierce, you could say partisan, a fierce political antagonist, but he always believed that basically we have more in common. After all, for all the cussing and feuding and everything, we are all Americans, and we all believe in the same system. And this business of this bitterness, this acrimony, what I call Manichaean politics, this entered the poisonous atmosphere that's entered our political scene today. Senator Goldwater wouldn't abide by that, particularly coming from his party.
Well, I know a good bit about Barry Goldwater, and I also know that he was fed up before he died and let it be known, and tried to his very best to be an honest and ethical man. And this lobbying that's got to the point where it is now, the K Street influence, didn't interest Mr. Goldwater very much, did it?
Well, if I don't want to use a word that'll get you in trouble, but when asked whether he'd be a lobbyist after he left the Senate, his exact words were, I quote it in the book, I'm too old to be a pimp. So yeah. that's what he felt about the lobbying. And one of the awful things, as I point out, one of the things that we felt brought the Republicans into power in 1994 was the culture of lobbying and what we felt at the time was the corruption of the Democratic Congress, which had been the Democratic House, which had been in power for 40 years. But it seems that in a period of one decade of 10 years, the Republicans on the Hill, and I'm talking about people who led the movement, Newt Gingrich and Tom DeLay and Dennis Hastert, were able to reach the level of lobbying corruption in 10 years that it took the Democrats 4 decades to build up.
You mentioned, well, you've got a whole chapter about Gingrich in the book, which is quite interesting. I don't know a lot of what I call real Republicans that do have a great amount of respect for his style of politics. And also, you mentioned in your book, well, one of the most interesting pieces in it, said, and I'll quote it, said, "Let me tell you, there are things that have taken place in the Bush-Cheney White House that Nixon would have gagged at. Not because he thought they were wrong, but because they were so blatant." We've got a completely different animal in there right now, don't we?
Well, the arrogance, they charge it off to 9/11, but what we're talking about when we're talking about this type of corruption has nothing to do with 9/11. There is a level of probity and honesty that you're supposed to expect from the people you elect to office, but nowadays in Washington, in the past 15 years, they built the K Street machine. The lobbying has just gone wild. Jack Abramoff is unbelievable by former standards of lobbying. Back in Truman's day, we talked about 5 percenters because these lobbyists, these freeloaders would get 5% of government contracts. Nowadays, there are billions involved, and it's out of hand. What I said about Nixon and the Nixon administration, the type of thing that goes on in this White House, and we think in terms of Congress, in terms of the corruption, but the Abramoff thing, which disgusted me, was not simply Congress, not simply those people, but it reached right into Karl Rove's office. Karl Rove's executive assistant, Susan Ralston, there got to be 50,000 young women or middle-aged women who might be an executive assistant to the number one aide to the president. And where does he get it? He gets it straight from Jack Abramoff. So there's a direct pipeline there, and it all has to do with it leads to an atmosphere that, as I say, we didn't have in the old years. Although Washington has never been clean by any means, it's reached depths now, and regrettably, from a Republican standpoint, it's the Republicans are in power.
And you say it's the most corrupt administration in your lifetime?
In my lifetime, and if anybody wants to challenge, as I said, I wasn't around when Grant and Harding were around. But my lifetime, I'm from New Orleans, as I say, and what I said concerning Katrina and help New Orleans. If you want to get some money down in New Orleans, the thing to do is try to get Halliburton in on some no-bid contracts. Then you get the money, I guarantee you, just like it's going over to Iraq. They're just the outrage is, and I say outrage is, I worked, in addition to Goldwater, as you know, as I say in the book, I worked for George H.W. Bush when he was vice president and in his campaign for the presidency, beginning back in 1980. I haven't talked to George H.W. Bush about this particular subject in this particular way, but I can tell, and after all, it is his son, but I can tell you this is a level, he's got to be shaking his head, and he's got to be a man much in pain, not only over the foreign policy, but over what he sees in terms of the thing, way things are operating in this White House and the corruption we're talking about.
Well, I know you're completely well versed on the Rumsfeld Cheney cabal that weaseled in and was running the show, and Cheney still is, and Rumsfeld was doing his bit before he was ousted. But how did that happen? How did it happen that Rumsfeld, Junior Bush's father, his bitter enemy, ends up as Secretary of Defense under his son's administration? I would think it took a tremendous amount of gall for his President Bush's son to do that.
Well, that was the first thing that alarmed me. Of course, I knew George W., young George, before he was governor and while he was governor, and what the change that seemed to have overcome him when he became president, it was baffling. When he put Don Rumsfeld, and Don Rumsfeld, did, when you said bitter enemy, believe me, George H.W. Bush is not the type of man to hate, or really, he doesn't like to think in terms of enemies. But Donald Rumsfeld is a first-class conniver, and I've been around this city for a long time, and I was with the administration for a long way. And he tried to do old man Bush in three times, politically. And when I heard he was going on as Secretary of Defense, I thought this was a direct affront to George H.W. Bush, to his father. And when he said, I answer to a higher father, he told Bob Woodward, I answer to a higher father when I ask a question about whether he consulted with his father. Well, I'll put it this way. If it had been up to a higher father and his name had been George Smith or something, he'd never become president. He should owe his father something. And the appointment of Rumsfeld was beyond me. And Rumsfeld's qualifications, when he left town, after the Ford administration, when he left town, he was not a very, he didn't make many friends around this town, I'll put it to you that way. And the reason is that his arrogance really reflected and personified everything that you see in this administration about the conduct of the Iraq War. And as I also say in the book, he and Dick Cheney are peas in a pod. And that also strikes me as it came as a great surprise, because I had known Dick Cheney and I was a good friend of Mrs. Cheney prior to his vice presidency.
Well, Rumsfeld, might as well say it the way I mean it, he screwed Herbert Walker Bush out of the vice presidency.
Twice he did it, and he tried to do it the third time.
And there was word that you tell it, the story about Lynn Nofzinger, he said about.
I was there. I wasn't at the meeting, but in 1980, at the 1980 convention, it was fairly obvious that George the Elder, and I was with George the Elder right up there in the suite at the time, it was fairly obvious that George the Elder should have been the logical vice presidential nominee, because he was the man who ran number two in the races. Well, a group of the old Ford people, led by Rumsfeld and Henry Kissinger, as I say, Kissinger wearing his Dr. Strangelove rather than his Metternich hat, got together, tried to come up with this idea that Gerald Ford could be vice president and we'd have a co-presidency, Reagan-Ford. And they worked long into the night to try to do this, and Rumsfeld, who was the leader of that group, his primary thing was to ace George H.W. Out of the vice presidency once again. Well, of course, it fell on its face for any number of reasons. It would have been a disastrous ticket rather than a dream ticket. And when somebody asked about the possibilities of who should Ron have, that was the way they called him, who should Ron put on as the vice presidential nominee, somebody suggested, what about Rummy? And Lynn Nofziger, an old friend of mine, was sitting around at the meeting, says, well, he says, we could get Rummy as vice president, but if we did, we better get Ron a food taster.
That's one of the best quotes in the book. I love that. I'd never heard that story before. Let's move on for a moment, if you will. We're also talking about the Holy Rollers and how they've got an iron grip, seemingly, on the party as well. How are you going to get the party back from them? I mean, you might defeat the Cheneys. You might get the DeLays out and the Gingrich influence out and such. But what about the Falwells and the Robertsons and the Dobsons who have really, in my opinion, infected your party?
Well, the neocons and the theocons, both of whom moved in the 1980s and came into power with this White House. It became a perfect storm with this White House. The neocons, in my concluding chapter, I say that the Republican Party as we now know it, and that includes the people who are running for president today, they have to run, and in order to get nominated, they have to cater and kowtow to the religious right, to the theocons. And the only way I see, and I think it's going to happen in 2008, in my opinion, is quite frankly, there comes a time when it's better if your party loses. I thought 2006, there are a lot of people like me, good Republicans, solid Republicans, who actually did not want to see the Republicans win last year in the election last year. And I think, as I say in the book, this patient has got to die and be reborn, because that's the only way we're going to get the theocons. Once they're cut off from power, then maybe they'll go back to their ideological party they really believe in, the Prohibition Party, something that is involved with morality. But morality at a civic level is one thing, but when you inject religion and church into politics as well as government, that's something else. I feel that the party just has to cleanse itself, and the best way it can cleanse itself, quite frankly, is by losing an election. Not that I have anything to say for the Democratic candidate, to understand, but at the same time, you see this Republican field we've got running, every one of them is doing hand flips in order to cater to the religious right.
Well, I have to ask, as far as the religious rights is concerned, didn't you see it coming? From the other side of the spectrum, I did see it coming, and it appeared to me that the Republican Party was willing to go ahead and sell out to these people to win elections. I think that's exactly what happened. Am I wrong? And if I am, didn't anybody see this coming and know what the consequences would be?
Goldwater warned against it. I have the quote in the book. He said, this business of expanding the base, but if you expand the base and you bring in people who have a different agenda or a specialized agenda that runs counter to the agenda that a party's supposed to stand for, you're in danger of wrecking and destroying the party, which is why... The name of my book is How the Neocons and Theocons and Holy Rollers Destroyed the GOP, because as of right now, the Republican Party, as we know, has been destroyed. You could see it coming, but what really brought it to a head was when you had a president who came in and catered to it so much that he established an office of what a faith-based initiative. What an Orwellian term that is. Who would have thought, if you'd have gone to Richard Nixon and said, I got a great idea, we want to get these religious voters on our side, why don't we set up an office in the White House that has nothing to do but handing out money to religions? He'd say, are you crazy? I mean, Nixon would have said that just was unthinkable, and it is unthinkable.
That's another good one for Barry Goldwater. Doug Wade, they had that. Wasn't it Barry Goldwater said he was a cross between an Amway salesman and Jerry Falwell?
That's right. That's right. Oh, that outraged him, because that's the question. You see, he was running on the Republican ticket. Goldwater was so opposed to the intrusion of religion into politics and into that type of politician that he actually backed the Democratic the Democrat. Now, I don't know how much he thought of the Democrat, but I think his thinking was what I'm talking about right now. Those people, those people, although they're supposed to expand the base of the party, actually, if you destroy the purpose of the party, the things that the party's supposed to stand for, then what is the purpose? Then the only purpose is, what Karl Rove sees it, is power. That is, Goldwater and the people I knew saw power as a means to an end of doing something. But to the Karl Rove and the people in power right now, they see power as the end itself. And that's what's happened.
If you're going to replace these people, if you, Victor Gold, you're asked to sit on a committee of Republicans and say, hey, we've got to sweep this room clean, and we've got to put in people who will follow the real Republican policies and ideology, who are you thinking of?
I don't see anybody on it yet. You know, every once in a while, Chuck Hagel will say something, and then I just go sort of wandering off in a mist, and I don't know where the hell he stands. But you have an independent voice like a Chuck Hagel. But actually, what's happened is the party is chased off. We had a fellow, you probably haven't heard of, a fellow named Joel Heffley. He was a congressman from Colorado. He was the man on the ethics committee who voted to investigate DeLay, the only Republican who voted. So needless to say, what Hatchett and DeLay did, they get rid of that guy.
Yeah.
So they threw him off the ethics committee because they didn't want the investigation. Well, Heffley, a good, solid, conservative Republican, he just gave it all up, and he retired. He wasn't going to fight it anymore. He retired. So I think we'd have to go to try to find somebody outside. I don't see, and some of the others that we've had that are pretty good were defeated or retired. Danforth in Missouri, he quit. He wasn't going to have any more of it. So I just don't know. If you're asking who I see on the scene today, it's a very bleak scene. And let me say, so that my Democratic friends will not understand, I'm really not looking on the other side and seeing anything but soundbite merchants. That's the thing that's discouraging. It's very difficult to see any of these candidates for president really get into the issues beyond sound bites, and they're all catering to the particular wings of their parties that will help them in the primaries and caucuses, and that's unfortunate, and it's terribly unfortunate as far as I'm concerned, on the Republican side.
It's unfortunate we're living in this soundbite society right now. We don't get an in-depth look and an honest look at most of the candidates. They are out there being what they need to be, what they have to be to attract votes and attract the money, and it's just a doggone shame that we can't have some old fireside chats with each one of them and find out what they're really made of, but unfortunately.
Well, look at a fellow like Mitt Romney. Now, in a normal year, let's take it 20 years back, Mitt Romney could be a fairly reasonable guy. I mean, by reasonable guy, you could have some sound policy from him. Instead of that, he's practically broken his back doing backflips to cater to this holy roller crowd. And here you got a guy like that coming out, and what is his main issue? By God, we need a constitutional amendment on same-sex marriage. And as I say in the book, I can just see Benjamin Franklin and James Madison walking out after the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, and Madison turning around to Franklin and saying, "My God, Ben, we forgot to put an item in there defining marriages between man and woman." Now, there are issues this country had, but that is a priority issue to this theocon crowd. And here you've got a guy like Romney who's taking time and taking energy to placate that element. And so in order to get nominated, they all go through that. They all go through that. And it just, as I say, you can't get, God knows, let me put it, if Goldwater were alive, he'd still be Goldwater. But he could not possibly get a Republican nomination today. And keep in mind, Goldwater defined conservatism. They called us, and those they called us extremists, as Barry said. In his latter years, he said, "I guess I'm a moderate now."
Oh, I remember the big mushroom cloud ads.
Yeah, and yep.
Effective.
The mushroom cloud ads. When I talk about the dirty politics, one of the things that we had, I mean, the mean-spirited politics we had back then, directed against Senator Goldwater during the Johnson campaign, by the Johnson White House, and then we take office 40 years later, and what do you see spewing out of our camp, the type of libel that they direct against candidates like Senator Max Cleland, morphing him with Osama bin Laden because he voted against the so-called Patriot Act. You're quite right. Back in those days, Senator Goldwater was subject to what we call mean-spirited, dirty politics, and now it just seems to be universal.
And it's odd how the mushroom cloud shows up again right away, right after 9/11 and the Iraq War business.
You mean Condoleezza Rice?
Yeah, we don't want to come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
Yeah, that's their working up enthusiasm for the war, and Condoleezza Rice. By the way, for those people who might, when you get into the book, and I hope you get into it, it's not just George W. and Cheney and the Congress, but I wonder about people like Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell, who, after all, were enablers to this, to all of this. You might say that, well, George W. doesn't really understand foreign policy, it's not too deep, but people like Rice are supposed to be around, they're supposed to understand. So what's she doing? She's running around making political speeches saying, talking about mushroom clouds, because they have weapons of mass destruction. We go into that too in the book.
Most of all, I had some understanding of that, but I will never ever understand completely what went through the mind of Colin Powell through that whole affair.
It's a question I raised. The fact is, it's like the elephant in the room. Colin Powell had to know that the evidence on weapons of mass destruction was not there, that Vice President Cheney was wearing a patch of CIA to get the kind of intelligence he wanted. When Colin Powell tells us, says, "Well, they snookered me." Wait a minute, we've got a four-star general here. If there's anything generals know, it's intelligence that's twisted and distorted, that type of stuff. If it had not been for Colin Powell getting up and making that speech at the UN, I don't think this administration would have had the public, any kind of public backing to go into this. He was the chief enabler. Why did he do it? That's as big a question to me as what George H.W. thinks of his son's policies. I will never understand what went through Colin Powell's mind. And now he'd like us to forgive and forget, but the fact is that he was the guy who did it, and he went before the UN, and may I point out, historically, he was the first Secretary of State to go before the UN at a time like that. In the past years, no Secretary of State went before the UN to make that type of pitch. So he had to know what he was doing, and it's just a puzzle.
Yeah, it was usually our UN rep, Anestis Kefauver, somebody
well,
like
that. It wasn't in, it was Warren Austin at the time of the Korean War. It wasn't Dean Acheson. It was Adlai Stevenson.
I meant Adlai Stevenson. What am I thinking?
Well, you must be of my generation. When you go back to Estes Kefauver, most people say, "What are you talking about?" but Estes, I remember Estes. But it always was the UN our ambassador. So when they come to Powell and they say, "Look, we want you to go and make this case for WMDs," Powell doesn't say, "Why me? Why don't we got John Negroponte there? Let him know. He knows why they wanted it. He had to know why they wanted it up there." It's a puzzle. I just don't understand it.
Oh, someday, I hope it's explained. I wonder about that all the time. I had respect for Colin Powell, and I lost a lot of it, and I lost most of it during that whole affair. Victor, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. You're a gentleman that I could sit and talk to many days. Your book is just a terrific read, and we hope you do quite well with it. You should. I think every Democrat should read this book. Give you great insight into what a real Republican is thinking, and we need to know that, all of us do. Victor, thanks so much for being on the program.
Well, thank you for giving me this much time, and it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
A real gentleman, a real Republican, who does feel as though his party has left him. This book, I'm not kidding you, Invasion of the Party Snatchers, How the Holy Rollers and the Neocons Destroyed the GOP. You will find a lot of great stuff in this. Not a huge book. It's what do we got here? About 235 pages. It explains it all very well from a real Republican's point of view, and this gentleman has nothing but contempt for this present administration and the Gingriches and the Tom DeLays and the people who really did hijack the Republican Party. There's no question. This book's available everywhere. It's from Sourcebooks, and it's available at Amazon and all the places you normally go to get your books. And I hope you'll give it a read. I'm going to give away a copy of it a little later on in the program. And I wish I could have everybody that listens to this program read this book. I recommend it that much. I really do. 866-546-5254. I guess it's a little close to the top of the hour to take a phone call right now. I guess we'll wait until after the top of the hour. Vic is one of those guys that I'd just die for to sit around and talk to all day. I think I've told you, I was once at a dinner in Washington, just three of us. And, my friend who has this high powered place on, K Street and, his good friend, who was Lyndon Johnson's personal attorney. I don't know how I ended up in it. Well, I do know, but we went to this nice restaurant and, you know, a couple of bottles of wine, and these two gentlemen started talking, and like I just sat there like, oh, my God. I think I learned more about Washington that night than I ever knew the cumulative total. I think it's that night when I learned what a small community Washington, D.C. is. I didn't realize before that how well all these people know each other and how they all follow the same cocktail circuit and all that. It's it really is a village, a very, very, very small village Washington is. I know you look at a big metro area like that and wonder, what the hell is he talking about? But it is. It's a small town. Everybody knows everybody, and politics being what it is, they all talk. And it's, boy, you'd like to be a little fly on the wall with a lot of these gatherings that they have on their cocktail circuit. And there's a doings every night in Washington. If you got your tux and your ladies with your fancy gowns, you can go to one of those big high roller, big hot shot meetings every single night. It never, never stops. Well, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. We hope you'll stay with us during the break. Go out and get yourself something cold to drink, peanut butter and jelly sandwich, or some chips, or whatever you'd like. Maybe some celery for all you health crazy people. And we'll do the same. You listen to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. And we're going to be back right after the news.
This is the Quality News Network. In a narrow vote, the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld a nationwide ban on partial birth abortion. The High Court voted 5-4 on the disputed abortion procedure. According to Justice Kennedy, opponents of the law did not demonstrate its unconstitutionality. Violence continues in Iraq as 170 people were killed today when four bombs detonated at different locations in mostly Shiite areas of Baghdad. The deadliest of the attacks killed at least 112 and wounded 115 when a car bomb went off in a market in central Baghdad. Controversy continues over authorities ignoring warning signs of Virginia Tech gunman Cho Sung-wee's apparent mental instability. Reports say he'd been accused of stalking two women and had been taken to a mental health facility. Cho killed 32 students and teachers and wounded 29 when he opened fire in a dorm and classroom before taking his own life. President Bush today told Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir to honor his obligations and end the bloodshed in the Sudan and allow humanitarian aid to reach the people of Darfur or face new economic sanctions. The president delivered the warning during a speech at a U.S. Holocaust museum. Three people have been killed in a Turkish publishing house which produces Bibles in an apparent attack on the country's Christian minority. Rising nationalism among the 99% Turkish Muslim population has led to increased pressure against Christians and the murder of a Catholic priest last year. In Nagasaki, the city's 61-year-old mayor died in a hospital early this morning after being gunned down in front of its campaign offices yesterday. Police have arrested the shooter, thought to be connected to Japan's largest crime syndicate. Today in Seoul, a South Korean intelligence official reported a flurry of activity surrounding North Korea's main nuclear reactor. Analysts speculate the movement may indicate Pyongyang is finally making good on its promise to dismantle its nuclear weaponry program. In Gaza, about 200 Palestinian journalists have clashed with parliamentary security guards during a demonstration demanding the release of a BBC reporter. 44-year-old Alan Johnston was kidnapped by unknown gunmen more than a month ago. Saudi Arabia announced it will forgive 80% of the more than $15 billion Iraq owes it. Russia has refused to discuss debt forgiveness until it secures oil field concessions from the Iraqi government. The chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff says Iranian-made weaponry has been discovered in the Taliban strongholds of southern Afghanistan. Marine General Peter Pace says the arms seizure suggests Iran is more involved in the Afghani insurgency than previously suspected.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking.
What are you looking for in your business bank?
Somebody that can offer me services such as car loans, equipment loans, leases, a line of credit.
And do you think because they're local, they understand your needs better than a bigger bank would?
Yes, I think they're really aware of the community and are here to help the small business people.
So it's a local bank with big bank services?
Absolutely. They're here on a regular basis to make sure if there's any other services they can provide, they're here to talk about it.
Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
We searched out a bank that would have the flexibility and the understanding of our needs and a willingness to spend the time doing that.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
A study just released says using ethanol instead of gasoline raises ozone levels and could cause increased air pollution. Research says areas most affected would be in New England and in Southern California. AOL has moved into the TV business. The online company will now be offering a full slate of programming with content coming out of Hollywood. AOL made the slate announcement in time for the start of the ad buying season. A former NBC executive has been hired to head the web company and lead it down its new path. Just a few weeks after signing a landmark free trade agreement with the U.S., South Korea announced today it will begin similar talks with the EU next month. Negotiations on this issue have been going on for nearly a year now. China's main newspaper says the country is expected to sign $12 billion worth of import deals when Chinese officials visit the U.S. next month. Likely to be involved are manufacturing and electronic goods. Intel's quarterly profits jumped 19%. The chipmaker credited lower production costs and a significant tax windfall. Today, EU antitrust regulators announced fines totaling $370 million against Dutch beer companies such as Heineken and Grolsch. The companies were charged with price fixing and running an illegal cartel. Light sweet crude is trading at $64.35 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And looking to Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is up 29 points, the NASDAQ is down 6 points, and the S&P 500 is up 3 points. Remember, you can always log on and find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second hour of the Guy James Show here on a Wednesday. Glad to have each and every one of you along with us. Hello to everybody over at iTunes. Thank you for joining us today, you folks at Democratic Underground and Democrats.com and SmirkingChimps.com and our friends over at Thinking Progress. And some of these days I'm going to have to list all the websites, and I need to do that on my own website to get a bunch more links up there because we're linked in a lot of different places, and I need to return the favor. Not being a techno wizard, I don't do my own website, so I've got to get somebody else to do it for me, and I'll send him a note and have him do that here in the next day or two. I'm going to give away a copy of this book. I truly am. It's called Invasion of the Party Snatchers, How the Holy Rollers and the Neocons Destroyed the GOP. I know that you'll enjoy reading it. It's by Victor Gold. And I'm going to give it to the second person to call me right now. And if you don't call, I'm going to feel oh so bad. And we'll send it out tomorrow to the second person that calls. That's one of those things you shouldn't do unless you're willing to get embarrassed. Of course, it takes a few seconds. We've got, what, a 22-second delay over the Internet, I think it is, something like that. Yeah, something like that, 22. I think I timed it. We'll get started on a few other things that I wanted to talk about in this hour. I see... the bank, I made a note to myself about the bankruptcy. They're having a lot of problems now, as you did, as you have seen with the subprime, what do you call it? All of a sudden I'm drawing a blank. The predatory lenders that have done, sucked people in on these interest-only loans and the ARMs that go up to extremely high rates and all that. Those questionable loans usually have a term at a low interest rate, which always goes up after the original term is over. And what's happening now, and we're finding a lot of people this is happening to, the terms are ending and the interest has gone up and so are the payments, and when the value of the house hasn't increased, and It's not right now. The refinancing that the borrower was counting on can't happen. And bankruptcy is usually the result. And as you well know, one of our favorite bills in Congress, the bankruptcy has been made much harder by that bankruptcy bill. Harder on the bankrupt and easier on the lender. And, of course, the blood-sucking oil companies have at the same time made everything that has to be transported a whole lot more expensive by jacking up their prices. The consumer's in a real crunch right now is what I'm trying to say. Let's see. Here's one call. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy.
Hello.
This is Ray.
Hi, Ray.
Sorry, I'm not number two.
Okay, let's head over here to number two. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, hi.
That
was quick.
You're the second caller.
I'm the second caller. That's what I wanted to make sure.
Yeah, and all I need for you to do is send me an email, guyjames@theguyjamesshow.com.
Okay.
And we'll bounce that book out to you tomorrow.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Interesting interview. It's nice to know that not all Republicans are like their current spokesperson.
Oh yeah, I mean I've got old friends that are Republicans, and hell, they're like actual real people.
Well, I spent my youth admiring Teddy Roosevelt and Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Both of those guys, if they showed up at the caucus, would be thrown out on their
fingers. Oh, absolutely. Radicals. Crazy radicals.
Crazy radicals.
Of course, Abe wouldn't be good-looking enough nowadays. He wouldn't... I tell you, the way we choose presidents in this country right now is shameful. It really is.
Well, okay, I'll send an email.
Yeah, and don't forget, and some of you, when you send me emails, I've had several of you lately send me emails, and you said you got them back. And what you sent them to was guy@theguyjamesshow.com. You have to put guyjames@theguyjamesshow.com. All righty?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
And we'll get that book right out tomorrow, and I guarantee you'll like it. I've got a lot of books around here. I should start passing them out every day. Publishers are oh so generous giving us books when we have interviews. And I have books that we haven't done interviews because I wasn't that interested in doing an interview with the people, or didn't have time, one or the other, or couldn't set up a schedule. But that's one way somebody does a show like this, gets to meet and talk to a lot of really terrific people. And not in all cases. Sometimes they're not so terrific, but usually they are. 866-546-5254. I want to play you another little clip here we had. This one is about Tammy, from Tammy Bruce and Bill O'Reilly. I don't know how many of you saw that interview. Tammy Bruce drives me nuts. She's one of them that jumped on the bandwagon. She's a white lesbian woman who was president of NOW in California. Maybe even nationally. I'm not now in California. A liberal Democrat, she always said, and when the money got right on the right side of the dial for the right wing, she switched and now supposedly is, anti-everything the Democrats do. And so she's on with Bill O'Reilly, and this conversation I found to be really humorous.
Continuing now with the IMUS controversy, which has metastasized into an ideological witch hunt by evil forces. Or am I overstating? Joining us now from Los Angeles, radio talk show host and Fox News contributor Tammy Bruce. Now, as the former L.A. president for NOW, National Organization for Women, you certainly know this world.
Sure do.
And I am. Sean Hannity and I are doing an investigation on this, and we should have it for everybody on Monday on The Factor.
Oh, my God, everybody look out. O'Reilly and Sean Hannity teaming up in an interview. Oh, that's got to be good. On an investigation, rather. That's got to be a beauty.
Great.
But I am seeing danger for this nation because of all of this dishonesty being fed out of this far-left swamp into the mainstream media. Am I overstating it?
No, you're not. And coming from the left, one of the agendas that we had, of course, was a realization that we had to at least make our agenda appear to be broader and more accepted than it was. We would create subgroups, separate special interest groups, making it appear as though there was a large mainstream movement occurring when in fact there wasn't. Of course, the argument was that the end justified the means. Now, in this instance, and what you've just talked about with Mr. DeLay, is what happened to you is what happened, what I consider the test case back 6-7 years ago to Dr. Laura Schlesinger, with a word that is plucked out of a sentence used in an attempt to destroy one person. That effort, Bill, was launched by about a half a dozen people only and facilitated through the Internet, a well-financed small group of people who have literally, and they did then and they still do, have a list of individuals that are to be targeted because they know that, well, you're on it, of course.
It's
people who are not intimidated, who will not be silenced of their own accord, and so they must be destroyed. We saw it start with Coulter a few months ago, and it's moved to Imus, and of course they will move down their list because we're moving into this election.
Okay, now the Laura Schlesinger thing you're talking about is she had a television show. She said something about gays and the Bible. They took it out, they ran with it, all the sponsors of her TV show bolted, and she didn't get a television show. And that was the first way. But, you know, people will say to you, listen, Don Imus was essentially a liberal guy on the radio. He gave platform to the far left. Why would they target Don Imus?
Well, he's just the reason why I get targeted is, quote, not being a, quote, real Democrat. He is targeted because I see him as being the Lieberman, if you will, of the Democratic framework. There is a civil war going on right now between the far left, individual extremists, as you've noted them to be, and the classical liberal basic Democrats. And that is where you saw the Lamont-Lieberman attack happen, the attempt to purge Lieberman. In order to be able to even go after Republicans eventually or conservatives, these far-left forces need to purge our own house of Democrats like myself who speak the truth and will confront them. On
Democrats like her who speak the truth. Now, here's a woman who claims to be a Democrat, Democrats like myself, she said, that her only claim to being an actual Democrat is that she understands that it's okay to be a lesbian. She sticks with that's fine. And, of course, it is. But that's her only claim to being a Democrat. Other than that, she's disavowed almost everything to do with the National Organization of Women. She's disavowed almost everything that the Democratic Party does, every candidate they put up. And she still says, oh, I'm a Democrat. She is not a Democrat. And now here's poor Bill O'Reilly. A man whose personal decadence is beneath contempt was spotlighted on a big show on Fox with huge ratings, greatly admired by a lot of people. I want to ask my right-wing friends, who are fond of telling me what a scoundrel Bill Clinton is, and yet Bill O'Reilly's okay. Anybody want to explain that one to me? Anybody? Because I don't get it. I really don't get it. Bill O'Reilly, Mr. Talk Show, smart mouth, know-it-all guy, goes on the air and says, I'm never going to speak of this incident again. Paid off this woman in this sexual harassment suit. Mr. Falafel himself paid her off and then has the temerity to tell everybody, I shall never speak of this incident again. What I want to know is, people, even John What's-His-Name that has his show on liberal shows, they have O'Reilly on, they never ask him about that. Wouldn't it be the first thing you do when old Bill O'Reilly sits down in your chair? Hey, Bill, what about that falafel incident? What's the deal? Whatever happened in that little business of you paying off your mistress, God knows how much money? What'd your wife think of that, Bill? And you're always moralizing what a good Catholic you are and how the Democrats are so decadent and all this. Bill, what about you, Bill? What about you? What the hell's wrong with the people that interview Bill O'Reilly and don't ask him that? I don't get it. Sure, he wouldn't come back on your show. Who cares? And while we're on the subject of phony, sanctimonious gas bags, I've been remiss in failing to write about the fact that none other than Ann Coulter appeared before the Reclaiming America for Christ conference in Florida. We all heard about the other conference she was at, and repeated her faggot slur against Edwards. Apparently, she didn't get the big laugh she got at the CPAC, but then again, she was speaking this time, get this, from the pulpit of the Coral Ridge Baptist Church. So perhaps it was just the venue that prevented the full-throated applause for the catchy little lines that she's used to. But that's not the real news about this meeting. Coulter's been getting away with her nasty little shtick for less than half the time that Don Imus did. So she's got a way to go before the TV bookers and the mainstream fans and the media realize that they're actually alienating an audience instead of gaining one. And sooner or later, they will understand that. And the real news is what others said at the conference that hasn't been reported at all, as far as I know. We had to dig for this. Adele Stan of the American Prospect covered this conference and reported back on some very interesting developments. This is the Reclaiming America for Christ conference recently in Florida. It featured all the usual suspects, but with some new arguments that many of us have never heard before, but I thought this one was really clever. Despite a bullet-pointed sheet from Southern Baptist Convention head Richard Land in the conference literature that called for Christians to become good stewards of the environment, he gave a speech that tarred today's environmentalists with the brush of communism. Yeah, communist. If you're for a clean earth, you're a communist. And here's what he said. He said, all the pinks have become chartreuse. That's the environmental crowd. In an America run by secularists, his handout read, human life would become more commoditized. There would be clone farms and polygamy, all part of this neo-paganistic triumph. That's what I'm talking about when I talk about we Democrats not wanting to appear to be godless heathens. There are just as many people of faith in the Democratic Party that there are on the other side. They just don't wear it on their sleeves. But how do you embrace evangelical Christians when they have leadership like this? And they vote for people like this being their leadership. I don't understand. Environmentalism leads to clone farms and polygamy? That's a good one. And I think I finally understand why the conservative Christians refuse to believe in global warming. They think capitulating to the commie environmental chartreusers or it will lead to a world of science fiction coming. I could be wrong. But if I'm not mistaken, isn't the Bible just chock full of polygamy? What's up with that? But then at this little get-together, their humor gets really dark. Family Research Council, Tony Perkins, complained that the Muslim call to prayer, now broadcast over American cities, he says it is broadcast over American cities. Where? Do you know of any places broadcast over American cities? I think the use of the word broadcast is a bit of a stretch here. It's most commonly announced over a mosque-owned public address system, much like the digital loops of chimes played in the bell towers of modern churches. And I know of a mosque that broadcasts its call to prayer, but it's out in the country. It's certainly not offensive to anybody. Perkins read the call of prayer, call to prayer aloud, implying it to be something to which a Christian should take offense, since it declares that there is no God but Allah. He conveniently, of course, omitted the fact that Allah. And here's just a little tidbit of information for you right-wing fundies that don't know any better. He omitted the fact that Allah translates from Arabic to English as the word God. Then he repeated it in Arabic. Allah Akbar, he said derisively. That's what the Islamic terrorists say before they cut off your head. Well, there's been a lot of, can you say crusade? What's been done in the name of the Lord? Let's not start that type of thing, Mr. Perkins. He went on to note that the call to prayer is broadcast 5 times a day, while Christians have a hard time getting a manger scene put up 1 time a year. Perkins asked, how is it that in our nation, where Muslims account for about 6 million of the 300 million living in this country, and Christians comprise 100 million, that Muslims can control the public policy and we cannot? He said, I suggest to you that it is because Christians have become apathetic to our role in shaping the policy of our nation, and it could have deadly consequences, not only for the unborn, but for the living as well. Mr. Perkins, how is it that when, you know, in a nation where Muslims account for 6 million of the 300 million living in the country and Christians comprise 100 million, that Muslims can control the public policy and we cannot? These poor, pitiful conservatives, they're always so put upon. Even if it's all in their heads. It reminds me of an old Phil Donahue show I saw years ago where a woman jumped up to protest the civil rights movement. You remember? And she said, and you've seen this many times, she said, you're giving my rights away to those people. That's some sort of an implication. There's only so many rights to go around. But back to this conference and Tony Perkins. This is the part that caught my ear. He said, lest any of the assembled miss the point, Perkins offered up the story of Phinehas, grandson of Moses, brother Aaron, from Numbers 25. Phinehas was rewarded by God with an everlasting priesthood for killing an Israelite and his Midian lover because God had forbidden the mixing of the men of Israel and the women of that tribe. The story is essentially, read it closely, the vindication of the criminalization of miscegenation. Killed that word. That's a sentiment consistent with Perkins' past courting, and he has courted such racist groups as the Ku Klux Klan, the famous Council of Conservative Citizens, America's largest white supremacist organization. Max Blumenthal will be glad to tell you all about that. Perkins bought on behalf of a political client, Senator Woody Jenkins, a phone bank list from former KKK Grand Wizard David Duke. And, of course, Biddle and the man Coulter's rhetoric wasn't any less violent in describing the murders of doctors and healthcare personnel who worked at abortion clinics. Coulter said the victims had been shot, or depending on your point of view, had a procedure performed on them with a rifle. Isn't that funny? Perkins' use of the scripture was only slightly less menacing than Coulter's flippant analogy. Perkins said, we read that Phinehas arose and took action. Not only is prayer required, and this is the important part of this, Perkins said, I warn you that if you begin to pray for our nation, that at some point in time, you're going to be praying and you're going to feel a tap on your shoulder and hear, son, daughter, I've heard your prayer, now I want you to do something about it. Now I want you to do something about it. And just in case his message might be misconstrued, Perkins offered a little caveat. He said, no, let me be clear in case the media is here. He said, I'm not advocating you go home and get a pitchfork out of your storage shed and run into your neighbor's house. Phinehas, the Bible tells us, used the javelin. But Coulter's full comment, unless she accused me of quoting her out of context, she said those few abortionists were shot, or depending on your point of view, had a procedure with a rifle performed on them. She told her audience, which responded with laughter. And then she adds a caveat. She says, I'm not justifying it, but I do understand how it happened. The number of deaths attributed to Roe v. Wade, about 40 million aborted babies and 7 abortion clinic workers, 40 million to 7, is also a pretty good measure of how the political debate is going, says Ann Coulter. This, again, was from the pulpit in a church. Who would allow Ann Coulter to speak from the pulpit of their church? Would say a lot about that congregation and that pastor, would it not? I think this is pretty clear what these folks mean when they say they want to reclaim the culture. The National Rifle Association, citing shifting political winds in Congress after the 2006 election, urged its members Saturday to unite. And their rhetoric gets more and more intense. Unite against, quote, the storm that lies ahead for gun owners. Today, they say, there is not one firearm owner whose freedom is secure, said the group's executive vice president, Wayne LaPierre. He told thousands gathered at the annual national convention, and I quote, you will rise and stand, and we together will fight them all. This is a guy promoting guns. Is Charlton Heston still ahead of that organization? Or is he dead? I don't know. Last time I saw him, he didn't look too good. We're going to pause for a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment. Don't go away. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to call the program.
Just a few of us picking, but the lady she played so easy and fine. And the chords that she strummed were so tastefully clever, they planted this song in my mind. 'Cause there's something so feminine about a mandolin, the way that they feel, the way that they ring. Just to see slender fingers moving so quickly made this boy want to sing. Strong, a few simple measures Cause there's something so feminine about a man, the way that they feel, the way that they ring. And that evening in a pasture somewhere near Austin, that man.
Fathers, they had pride. It wasn't perfect, they fought and died. 200 years of struggle for equality. Now we look more like a monarchy. The halls where justice did once reside has been sold out and replaced with lies. It's all money, power to the few. How long until they come for you? And you say that it can never happen here. And you say it can never happen here. Burn habeas corpus, tear up the writs, rubber stamp Senate of hypocrites. Those new detention camps weren't built for show. Posse comitatus was next to go. And you say that it can never happen here. And you say that it can never happen here.
Billy Shears really knows how to pick music, doesn't he? Music director of the Guy James Show, Billy Shears. Music courtesy of Billy Shears every day. Thank you, Billy. You do a great job with that. Great job. I think he and I have the same kind of ear for music. Just excellent, in our opinion. Oh, that's why they got lots of different kinds of music. There's kind of... I love... Many kinds. I'm somewhat of a musician myself and a singer, and so I like many kinds of music. There's just a couple of kinds that I can't gut, but who knows? It's all objective. It's all objective. We were talking about the neocons a little earlier, and congratulations to, let me see, to Bob. Bob won the book, and we'll be sending that out to him in Chicago. And we'll send that out tomorrow. Thank you, Bob. Thank you for listening to the program. And we'll get your book right out to you. But talking about these neocons, and our guest today, Vic Gold, talked about them. We went to war on deception. You know, you're talking about Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice and their lies when we went into war. We went to war on deception. We went to war on phony intelligence. And on the word of known liars looking to feather their own nest. But it doesn't matter. Because when you talk to these people, it doesn't matter at all. Because we got Saddam Hussein, and the world is so much better off. And, you know, you look at the whole ball of wax for the last 6 years. Yes, some top Bush officials were involved with Kenny Lay, who presided over the Enron scandal. But it doesn't matter because Kenny Boy's dead, and besides, who cares? Forget about the hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of pocketbooks that got robbed by Kenny Boy Lay and Enron. And sure, you know, our good friend Dick Cheney presided over the secret energy meetings, the results of which were never shared with the public, but we know, we do know that they talked about the oil in Iraq. But it doesn't matter because, well, it just doesn't matter. And you know, looking back at the whole scenario, yes, it appears that Junior Bush, his administration, had plenty of forewarning about 9/11 and chose to do absolutely nothing about it. But that doesn't matter because this whole thing is Clinton's fault for not getting bin Laden when he was, quote, offered to Clinton during his administration. And yes, the war hasn't turned out exactly the way we thought it would, but that doesn't matter because we've turned Iraq into what we like to call a terrorist magnet where we're drawing them in and then killing them. Oh, that's working so well. And the 3,200 or so who've died is, you know, is sad, but freedom isn't free, you know. And, oh, yeah, by the way, we had a little problem over at Abu Ghraib and inflamed the entire Middle East against us. But it doesn't matter because, you know, we have to show those people we mean business. And besides, Rush Limbaugh said it was nothing more, you know, than something like fraternity hazings. And, yeah, we were a little bit wrong on the cost of the war. It's been a little bit of an overrun. We estimated it would cost about $20 billion, and the Iraqis would be able to pay for it themselves, and now it's $500 billion. But, hey, it doesn't matter because we got Saddam, you know. And sure, we intentionally underestimated the cost of our Medicare bill to the public so they would accept it. And we told our budget director he'd be fired if he revealed the truth about what it actually cost. But it doesn't matter. Because as everybody knows, the public swallowed our propaganda and has no idea as to the real cost of the whole thing. And yes, we've lost millions of jobs due to unfair foreign trade policies. But it doesn't matter because those jobs were... They were only manufacturing jobs. You know, you had to get your hands dirty to them, and it really doesn't impact the income of those who fill the Republican political war chest with money. Anyway, losing those jobs hasn't hurt the wealthy. In fact, it's been damn good for the wealthy because their investments are paying off so handsomely now because all their investments are hiring cheap labor in foreign countries. And, you know, if you're one of these modern-day Republicans, you say, oh, sure, we got even with Ambassador Joe Wilson for telling the truth concerning the yellow cake uranium from Niger. We outed Valerie Plame, and even though she was a proven covert CIA agent, to cover up the fact that we lied about the Niger story. And the vice president in his office kept on lying about the whole incident. And so what? Cheney's right-hand man, Scooter Libby, is now a convicted felon but it doesn't matter because Fitzgerald couldn't get the goods on Cheney. You've got nothing on Cheney or Karl Rove, you Democrats. You've got nothing on either one of them. And sure, we planted a known male prostitute posing as a reporter into the White House press conferences so he could ask questions to make the administration look good. He even signed in and out of the White House at numerous times other than the press conference time, but it doesn't matter because the public doesn't care about that. It only cares about Bill Clinton's sex life. And, oh, yeah, we fired several outstanding U.S. attorneys because they wouldn't stoop to prosecuting Democrats for political reasons so that we can determine the outcome of elections in the crucial swing states in the future. And we can solidify even more power in the hands of the executive branch. But it doesn't matter because we can do any damn thing we want to regarding political appointees, whether it's ethical or not, because we own the White House and we're running the show. Dick, and Junior and Gonzalez, most of all Karl Rove and Dick Cheney. None of that matters. You talk about ethics breaking down in Washington, D.C. I'm not going to be sit here with rose-colored glasses on and pretend to tell you that things have always been hunky-dory and right up to snuff ethically in Washington and every Democratic administration. We know that's not true. There's been crime. There's been corruption. There's been political embarrassments. There's been all of that. But, oh, my God, nothing on this scale. Nothing that even comes close to the scale. The blatant disregard these people have for the American public is just breathtaking. Every day something new comes up. You know, this latest bill blocking this U.S. intelligence vote in the Senate. Check that one out. We don't have time to talk about it at length on the show today. But the White House, you know, they call Congress and tell the minority leader, hey, this is a loyalty vote. Vote with us on this. And they did. Don't we have real congressmen anymore that vote their conscience instead of what the White House wants them to do? Let's head on over to the phone. By the way, you can call us at 866-546-5254. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Well, nowhere near enough good congressman, Guy. It's Dave from California. I think you recognize my voice by now. But
yeah, I wonder how many good and decent congressmen we actually have. Can we count them on two hands? I don't know.
Well, let's see. Barbara Lee, she's great. Sam Farr, he's excellent. I think Dennis Kucinich. I'm growing to like Maxine Waters a lot. There's some that have the courage to vote the right way on issues and just don't say that whoever's putting up their money, how do you want me to vote? Too many do that. But anyway, I've come to a conclusion. We spent this yesterday, tax day, at the post offices around Humboldt County here. We had 10 jars, and each one was labeled one of the major government expenditures: education, social services, health care. One of them was military, one of them was justice and whatnot. And anybody that came up that was willing, we gave them 10 pennies and to them to distribute their pennies how they would like to see the federal money being spent. So quickly, education and environment and health care and housing was filling up, and nobody was putting hardly anything into the military and very little into the Department of Justice. And so Republicans, seeing that, reached in their pocket and grabbed extra pennies, took the whole stack and threw them into the military. And we'd say, are you available for a conversation on this? And most of them would indicate they would if it didn't get be too difficult. And so we would. We'd ask them about, did they realize that they were supporting largely Halliburton, Lockheed Martin, Bechtel, the major oil companies when they throw that money into the military? Already half of it's going to the military in various guises. But no, they wanted to rig it. And they went to get their friends to come up and to grab 10 pennies and throw them into the military jar.
that's quite a testament, that is. And by the way, congratulations. That's a great idea. I really like that.
Well, and it ended up still, there was less than 3% of Humboldt that went for the military, that we would be budgeting for the military. And all of that came from about six Republicans.
A rigged 3% at that.
Yes,
man, when you got to rig it to get 3%, that's pretty sorry.
Well, it's a big university area. You've indicated that you live in a community where a lot of people refuse to think even a little bit and vote the way that Limbaugh tells them and whatnot. But we don't have that here, thank heavens.
Yeah, it's apples and oranges of your area and where we live here. This is hardcore conservative area. Hardcore. I'm talking the hardest core that I think I've ever seen.
Now, that's too bad. That's really pathetic. I trust you heard about an aide telling Bush that two Brazilians had just been killed in Iraq, and he was really devastated to hear that. He thought, oh, that is so terrible. That's going to make us look so bad. finally went on to ask, how many is a Brazilian?
God. Dave. You're on fire today, Dave. That's a good one. I remember when he did ask the president of Brazil, do you have any black people here in Brazil? I thought that, you know, he might go to Harlem and ask that as well. The guy's so pitifully ignorant of the lay of the land, not only in this country, but around the world. We probably never have had a president in modern times when it's important to know about foreign countries. Probably never been anybody as stupid about it as him. And, you know.
That's why I found myself wondering. I wonder if that is a joke.
No, yeah, you could almost you could almost say that. Thanks for your call, Dave. Good to hear
from
you.
Thanks for being that guy.
Hey, I want to be sure and mention a press release that we got from our friend Phil Restino. And Phil is the co-chair for the Central Florida Veterans for Peace group. And the press release, it's a news advisory, actually for tomorrow. No, it's a little bit. No, it's dated just a little bit. Anyway, I don't know how I got screwed up on the dates on this. But the Veterans for Peace call for congressional action to remove George W. Bush from the office of President of the United States. Veterans for Peace, dear member of Congress, on the second anniversary of the invasion and occupation of Iraq, and this is about a month ago, this letter is being sent on behalf of the Veterans for Peace, a national organization of military veterans, to appeal for congressional action to remove George W. Bush and Richard Cheney from the offices of President and Vice President of the United States, respectively. We do not make this call lightly, and as former members of the U.S. Armed Forces, we take our responsibilities as citizens very seriously. For that reason, we believe that when our government conducts a war of aggression on Iraq and commits a growing and appalling series of what must legally be considered war crimes and crimes against humanity in the execution of that war, it violates Article 6 of the United States Constitution and War Crimes Act of 1996 and numerous international treaties which are legally binding upon our nation. Seeing this happen and understanding all too well the suffering it is causing and will continue to cause amongst our soldiers, their families, the people of Iraq, and the fabric of both our societies, we cannot stand by in complicit silence. If you will read the relevant sections of the Nuremberg Principles, the Geneva Conventions, and the other treaties this administration has violated, you will be left with only one conclusion: that this administration's war in Iraq, in addition to being increasingly unpopular among Americans, is an unmistakable violation of our Constitution and federal law, which you have sworn to uphold. In our system, the remedy for such high crimes is clear. This administration must be impeached. We urge you as sincerely and solemnly as possible to begin impeachment proceedings against President Bush and Vice President Cheney in the House of Representatives, and follow that with a trial in the Senate. In the name of humanity, we beseech and direct you to act most urgently. David Klein, President, Veterans for Peace, Incorporated. Thank you, Phil Restino. Phil's the co-chair of the Central Florida Veterans for Peace, for sending us that. Thank you very much. It's, what do we got, about 8 minutes, about 7 minutes to the hour right now. And you do have time to give us a call, 866-546-5254. Lots of good news coming out of Baghdad today. And you know how I mean that. CBS said a parked car bomb detonated in a crowd of workers at a Shiite marketplace in Baghdad on Wednesday, killing at least 82 people. Police and hospital officials said the attack was one of four bombings in Baghdad on Wednesday afternoon, which killed at least 127 people in total. The police in Ramadi uncovered 17 decomposing corpses buried beneath two schoolyards in a district that until recently was under control of Al-Qaeda fighters. At least 85 people were killed or found dead across the country on Tuesday, and that was updated to 127. Oh, that's on Tuesday. How much longer can this go on? How much longer? it seems there's no end to the brutality that's going on in Iraq, and we're completely our eyes are off of that right now, aren't they? The American public has been distracted from the war in Iraq, and people just aren't paying attention. Hardly mentioned it on the news. It's hardly mentioned at all now. I found this interesting article, Land of the Free and Home of the Jailed, I call it, in a supplemental budget request. And all of you who are planning on going to the Republican National Convention in St. Paul, Minnesota, might want to pay close attention to this. In a supplemental budget request, Ramsey County Sheriff Bill Fletcher is expected to ask for considerable funding to pay for security during the 2008 Republican National Convention in St. Paul, Minnesota. Fletcher, who narrowly won re-election in 2006, expects to arrest between 3,000 and 5,000 protesters during the GOP's presidential nominating convention in September 2008. According to a source close to the policymaking process in St. Paul, the unconfirmed amount, $4,432,000, includes more than $550,000 for chain link fence to build outdoor holding areas for protesters. According to Dave Verhasselt, spokesman for Ramsey County Manager David Twa, the St. Paul police generally have jurisdiction over arrest and the sheriff over jailing once arrests are made. But yes, there's been a request for between $3 and $4 million, and they're going to have these holding areas. That ought to be really nice. In 2004, six protesters were arrested at the Democratic National Convention in Boston, while approximately 10,000 were arrested during the RNC in New York City, according to sources close to the budget process. The St. Paul Police Department has already begun working with groups interested in expressing peaceful opposition to the RNC, and Fletcher's request appears on its surface to conflict with that process. Home of the muzzled, land of the jailed. Boy, they're getting ready a couple years ahead of time for what they expect to be mass arrest. Now, why would anybody be protesting at a Republican National Convention? Do these conventions even mean anything anymore? They really don't to me. They just serve as showcases for a lot of people to get up and give a speech. Our candidates have been chosen a long time before that. I do want to mention that tomorrow we're going to have Lieutenant Eric Schein. And he's going to be our guest tomorrow. I'm looking to see here. The Bush administration has been after this guy for a long, long time. And he's going to be here to tell us about the inner workings of our government and U.S. corporations and federal contractors and so forth. He's been hounded half to death by the Bush administration. I had a nice press release here, and I don't know what happened to it. But he's got a case pending in front of the federal court. And he will be our guest tomorrow in the first hour of the program. So do keep that in mind. We've had a good week for people to have on the show today. I really enjoyed Victor Gold a lot. Mikey Weinstein yesterday. Kinds of people that I could talk to quite a lot, and evidently from the email we got, you enjoyed them very much as well. We're down to that point in the program. I'm sorry, we got a couple of phones ringing here, but we can't take your calls right now. We've only got about a minute left, and call's back tomorrow. Why do you wait till the last minute anyway, huh? Don't do that. We've enjoyed having all of you with us today here on the Guy James Show. We intentionally stayed away from the Virginia Tech story. We pretty much set our piece on that, and we join with everybody in mourning the loss of all those folks. Innocent life lost. It's a tragedy, and the folks are with us in our hearts and our prayers. And all the talking about it in the world, I guess, isn't going to change anything with it now. So be advised that those people are in our thoughts and our prayers, and will continue to be. And I hope the healing comes for them. That, that's a tough thing for a lot of young folks to see things like that happening to them, most certainly. Well, you've been listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I want to thank you for being with us today, from all you listeners from all the different websites around the entire internet. Thanks so much for being with us today. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network, and don't forget, you've heard from the radical right.